Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Last week was an eventful one for financial markets and did happen to end on a high note, yet investors do remain on edge and the market tone could once again be negative by the end of this week. Joining us to discuss, glad to welcome back Jason Trejo, the head of asset allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Jason, thank you for dropping by on this Monday morning to kick off another trading week. Welcome back. Looking forward to our conversation.
Good morning, Dan. Happy Monday. It's good to be here for another week.
So, Jason, it was a week ago today you and I last spoke to talk about the volatility at the time we were witnessing in financial markets. So perhaps that's a good place to start just to refresh our listeners. So what exactly happened in the markets last week, which did begin on a very negative note and yet ended on a high note by the time we got to Thursday and Friday? Can you explain that evolution for us?
Well, if you were on vacation last week and then you looked at, you know, some various indexes and market levels, you'd think nothing really happened, over the course of the week, which of course we know wasn't true. As you mentioned, you know, this time last week on early Monday morning, there looked to be like a lot of stress or potential stress in the financial markets. But things ultimately kind of came almost exactly full circle. So for example, the S&P 500, you know, closed the week down only 4 basis points, so basically unchanged, even though futures on Monday morning were pointing to a 4% decline on that day. The VIX volatility index spiked to 65 early that morning. It basically doubled from where it was on the prior Friday. But by the end of last Friday, it was down to 20.4, which was actually below its close on the previous week. So the VIX actually declined over the course of the week. The 10-year Treasury yield ended the week at 3.94%. Before the payrolls report came out, the July payrolls report that came out on Friday morning, August 2nd, it was around 3.97%. So that payrolls report was sort of a catalyst to cause markets sort of the sell-off. You had to price more Fed rate cuts, yet here it is a week later, and where the 10-year is basically unchanged. And you can see credit spreads also some widening, things have come back. But essentially, you know, they've kind of come full circle. So still some, you know, concerns, but the market clearly has sort of backed off from pricing the more extreme concerns that it was, fearful just as of last Monday.
You did mention some better but not great economic data. So can you remind us of what your view is on the U.S. economy as well as the outlook for corporate earnings as we're nearing the end of the current Q2 reporting season?
Well, let's just start with the economy. I mentioned that the July payrolls report was a little bit of kind of a catalyst that kind of broke investors back in terms of growth concerns, elevated to kind of outright recession fears. This also followed on the July ISM manufacturing index that was below expectations and, in kind of contraction territory. So you had multiple data points that were raising kind of certainly alarm bells about how much the economy is slowing. What caused the markets to have a kind of bounce back last week was a couple other data points that offered a bit of a reprieve. So the ISM non-manufacturing or services index surprised to the upside. It wasn't a high number, but it definitely kind of beat expectations and it sort of reinforced that the prior data point that had actually been dropped, below into contraction territory, that looks to be like maybe a bit of a one-month, one-off. We also got the weekly initial jobless claims that were below expectations. It sort of reinforced the view that some of the July payrolls report weakness could have been due to weather effects, also auto plant productions kind of shut down in July, like a real seasonal impact. And so when you kind of look at that data collectively, it's kind of dialed back these concerns about just the economy kind of slowing very quickly, potentially into a recession. So that was the economic data. Now, it also kind of reinforced our view that ultimately we're going to get a soft landing. A data point on that front that was certainly less heralded was the Fed's quarterly report on household debt and credit metrics. It's something I've been looking at, on a regular basis because of concerns about the health of the consumer. Certainly a lot of data points showing how credit card debt is rising and delinquency rates for credit card debt is going up, and which is true. But credit card debt is only one piece of all household debt, and it's a relatively small piece, like less than 10%. The bulk of it is still mortgages. And in the Fed's report that showed, delinquency rates in all types of debt, which includes mortgages, auto loans, student loans, and credit card debt, the delinquency rate of all sort of duration or categories, whether it's 30 days, 90 days, That was only 3.2% in Q2. That was unchanged from Q1. This is very low historically. You know, for perspective, in the fourth quarter of 2019, you know, the last kind of full quarter before the pandemic hit, it was 4.7%, so nearly 50% higher. And even that credit card debt, that gets a lot of attention. If you look at the, you know, increase, it's sort of moderating. So the second derivative, of the, you know, the rate of change, or the rate of change for credit card delinquencies, you know, is also kind of, you know, moderating. So overall, this kind of reinforces the view that households are in kind of good financial shape. They're able to, you know, kind of weather some of the economic slowdown. They still have dry powder to spend. The wealth has gone up. So I think that's, to me, when I look at the data points last week, more so than the ISM services, you know, just the state of household finances, to me, is kind of the more reassuring part, because this is kind of a key fundamental driver. Another thing that I think is kind of interesting and relevant is just, you know, we're now about 85-90% done of the Q2 earnings season for our S&P of 100 companies. There have been a lot of anecdotes about how, you know, the consumer spending is slowing. A lot of companies kind of flagged that, especially for low-income consumers. The AI narrative has taken just a little bit of sheen off of it, although perhaps misguided to some extent. But you didn't get these massive beats and raise in guidance that we've had in the past couple of quarters. So by that, you know, relative, you know, past prior performance would suggest some disappointment there. But the overall EPS growth for S&P 500 companies in Q2 is on track to be about 11%, beating sort of the consensus by about 2%. And the guidance for the third quarter is kind of in line. We haven't seen any real kind of downtick, despite, you know, these kind of flagging of the consumer kind of slowing down. So if you have a consumer that's holding up and has good fundamentals and earnings growth that's solid and the guidance really isn't that bad at all, that again sort of provides a fundamental support for equity markets, certainly not to kind of roll over. So I think some of those data points were a little bit lost in some of the other headlines that, you know, people would point to, such as the ISM services, the weekly initial jobless claims that caused the market to kind of bounce back. To me, the more relevant point is, on a fundamental perspective, the case for a soft landing, case for equities holding up and going higher, was reinforced last week.
Jason, investor positioning and the unwind of consensus trades, such as the yen carry trade, served as the major driver of the market volatility. So where exactly does the positioning stand now?
Well, much of that sort of positioning unwind, you know, carry trade unwind or de-risking, I think that's largely done based on a variety of different metrics. So let's say we're at, you know, 85-90% away of done. And there could be a little bit more of sort of systematic strategies, you know, so your funds that kind of follow rules could de-risk this week. I think by and large, that headwind is over, and position for investors across all different types could actually start to turn into a bit of a tailwind, especially if the economic data proves to be, like, you know, the growth concerns prove to be overdone, because then investors could look to kind of ramp up risk again, especially with the Fed kind of interest rates. And I just need three different data points to kind of reinforce this. Is first, if we just look at, you know, retail investors, they've actually been pretty significant buyers of ETFs in the month of July and so far in August, you know, with, you know, relatively high levels. If we kind of go back over the past decade, I mean, these are significant inflows. So retail investors, by and large, seem like they've been buying, you know, the dip. Hedge funds had de-risked, you know, unwound different positions in July. But the data from last week across different kind of, you know, prime brokerages across Wall Street suggests that now they're actually adding back sort of exposure, you know, adding longs, not sort of, you know, adding shorts. But then also overall positioning is kind of closer to like a five-year average in terms of like how much risk they have on. Whereas, you know, a month ago, you know, or 2 months ago, it was closer to like, say, 75, 80th percentile. So definitely de-risking it, which gives them scope to add back risk. And then with earnings season done, or largely done, now you'll get companies going back to kind of resume buyback programs that shut down during kind of the in and around there when they report earnings. This can be a significant amount because companies have announced, you know, upwards of $1 trillion of share buybacks this year, with still roughly $500 billion to be done between now and year end. And again, the data kind of, you know, floating around suggests that that was ramping up last week, you know, and that ramped up from the prior week. This will continue now that companies are kind of, you know, further removed from their earnings season. So that's just, again, it's sort of technical support. It's almost like you have a corporate bid for the markets, for their own equities. So again, all those different factors of different types of investors buying equities have de-risked and are now in a better position to kind of add a risk, you know, assuming the economic conditions allow for it, provide the tailwind going forward.
As we begin to close out, can you speak to your outlook for markets near term? What are your expectations, and how is CIO recommending that investors be positioned at this time?
Well, I don't want to paint an overly rosy picture about the very near term. I think investors are kind of jittery. The fact that they're reacting this strongly to just a few data points, and data points that are not massive beats or misses either way, to suggest just how much the markets are on edge. We're also now in the middle of August, where liquidity is probably at its nadir in terms of how much liquidity there is in the markets, which means small moves or small amount of trading on a relative basis can actually lead to bigger market moves. So given how we get some data this week, whether it's on retail sales, again, the initial jobless claims on Thursday, July CPI data, if any of those disappoint, it certainly provides scope for the market to kind of pull back, this week. So that is, we're not certainly out of the clear. And the other thing that the markets, aside from wanting to see, good economic data kind of pushing back against these recession concerns, is indications that the Fed is willing to be fairly aggressive, if necessary, in light of a kind of floating economic activity. A few different Fed officials were out last week kind of downplaying some of the weakness and the need to act strongly. But really what matters for the markets, it will be Chair Jay Powell's speech at Jackson Hole, the central bank symposium on Friday, August 23rd. It'll be an opportunity for him to kind of lay out a framework for rate cuts going forward and also give maybe some indications of how aggressive they might be, at least implicitly, by flagging things such as if his inflation is coming down, policy is getting restrictive, perhaps they want to get back to neutral relatively quickly. These would be interpreted by the markets as a Fed that's willing to be more on the aggressive side, which certainly would be a net positive for equities overall. But given we don't know that, why that's happening, I think for the time being, the message for our clients and investors is, don't de-risk any further these levels. Also, don't necessarily chase kind of a rally that moves higher because that could quickly reverse again. Across different asset classes, whether it's fixed income, equities, we continue to favor kind of quality assets, not gauge in the more cyclical or speculative parts of the market on the hopes that, the soft landing materialize and Fed cuts will lift that. I think, given the late cycle concern that still will persist for a little bit while longer, I think, quality is, both in fixed income and equities is the way to be positioned. And the tech sector remains, a most preferred sector, even though, there's been some questions about the AI narrative. The Mag 7 multiple has derated 7 turns, quite a bit over the past, month or so. So, from a fundamental perspective, they still look attractive and their valuations are more consolidated now. So it's another sector that we think still has opportunities.
Jason, thank you again for dropping by Top of the Morning again to recap for our listeners, our clients, what was a roller coaster of a week in the markets last week, speaking to where we stand as of today, sharing CIO's near-term market outlook, as well as guidance when it comes to positioning. So appreciate your time, Jason, as always, and do look forward to picking back up with our conversation again soon.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.